further sections.
Because several of these sections are, I think, quite self-explanatory.
Well, it wouldn't, if they're short, it wouldn't hurt to read it. Well, we've got to do one or the other. Call the roll.
Yeah, let's read it. Some of us can't read very well.
A person commits a crime of refusing to assist a peace officer if upon command by a person known to him to be a peace officer, he unreasonably refuses or fails to assist in effecting an authorized arrest or preventing another from committing a crime.
Page 21. What COMITATUS means?
Comitatus.
I know that's what it says. What does it mean?
Policy county.
That means the sheriff patrol in Harden County.
Right, actually, Comitatus is a small community in Catalog Valley.
Unreasonably would take care of the person who was crippled or so on and so forth.
Yeah, that was added in here.
Move approval.
Second, call the roll.
Judge Burns?
Aye.
Senator Burns?
Aye.
Chandler?
Here.
Clark?
Aye.
Aye.
Jim Stead Johnson Knight?
Aye.
Baldy?
Aye.
Young, Mr. Chairman?
Aye. Page 24, section 4 is similar, except it's refusing to assist in firefighting operations. Subsection 1, it's upon command by a person known to him to be a fireman, he unreasonably refuses to or fails to assist in extinguishing a fire or protecting property threatened thereby. And sub 2 is upon command by a person known to him to be a fireman or a peace officer, he intentionally and unreasonably disobeys a lawful order relating to his conduct in the vicinity of the fire.
Roger, the present statutes which gives to a fire the right to issue a lawful order near the fire.
You say
based on a statute or something upon the parent of his office?
No, we've got.
We have a statute that prohibits obstructing firefighting equipment or personnel. I think you're attacking exactly the same problem.
Roger, was this put in by the attorney for the Portland Police Association?
I have a question on this. Here, if a guy is creating a nuisance of himself at a scene of fire, he's told to leave or whatever, and he's punished for that failure, and I think that's a good idea. I wonder why we do not perhaps have the same kind of a thing, or maybe we do, where the activity going on is the arrest or apprehension of a criminal suspect. Well, what I'm thinking is take a case like this thing down at Eugene here several years ago when they had these people in there and they loudspeakering to come out and so on, and hear all these radio people running around acting like yahoos and getting in the way of things and so on. If you've got a scene of the arrest,
no police department can keep the radio reporters out compared to they have a law behind them or not.
Well, they would call up and interview the guy who was holding hostages.
Yeah, that kind of thing. In other words, if
very non-professional on the journalist's part, I'd say.
Well, apart from that, maybe it isn't necessary enough, great enough evil, but it just occurred to me that you could have a similar situation. But apparently, nobody else believed the same way, so.
That gets a spooky area, though.
I move the adoption of the section, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion?
Isn't this covered other ways?
I'm a little bothered about one thing on this.
On obstructing officers, or just on the general, in the general provision, isn't this covered?
Right.
I'm bothered by this.
Isn't this covered in section 2?
Yes.
Obstructing governmental administration is
failing to disperse. So subsection of 5.
Judge Burns, I think we've got your situation covered. I'm just trying to think where it was.
I believe it's under disorderly conduct, failure to disperse upon a lawful order.
Oh, that's right.
Well, that would be covered, though, under sub 2 of section 4, too.
Only in the vicinity of the fire.
Yeah, but that's what you were addressing.
No, I was addressing myself to the vicinity of an arrest. Or a But if I agree with you.
I think under our riot article, we've got it. Got it.
Don, is not section 4 covered several different ways already?
You mean in this draft?
Not subsection 1.
It is not.
You could say that subsection 2 might be covered by the disorderly statute on failing to disperse.
Well, this ties it in more closely, though.
But we just felt that this would give fire department personnel, police, a little more authority to use emergency.
A little duplication, doesn't it?
Mr. Chairman, I move approval.
There you are. Call the roll.
Judge Burns?
Aye. No.
Senator Burns?
Aye.
Chandler?
No.
Clark?
Aye.
Cross?
Aye.
Knight?
Aye.
Foley?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye. Mr. Chairman, either Mr. Chandler will have to explain his vote or leave the room.
I'm bothered about sub 2 of the thing. Person known by him to be a fireman or peace officer, so forth and so on, because the definition of fireman is so broad. I see, particularly in the case of Forest Service and BLM, state forestry officials, an awful lot of pretty arrogant, unknowledgeable conduct in and around fire, shutting off roads 15 miles away and this sort of thing, moving people out of campgrounds when they're, you know, God knows how many miles away from things. Trying to shut off airports 30 or 40 miles away from a fire on the ground so that some fire spotter may want to land there in the next 10 or 15 minutes when somebody else who's trying to land there is going to occupy 30 seconds of runway time. I get a little tired of having to explain my
vote. I think that's a real problem, too.
Yeah, but how are you going to understand it?
Yeah, I don't know. But I know I've been involved in enough search and rescues and those kind of things where we, as sheriff, we were dealing with other agencies who were also involved that were very arbitrary with news people and the people who had legitimate reason to be in that particular area. They're just been absolutely outlandish.
People who happened to be there.
Yeah.
Didn't go there for that purpose. Ordinary citizens join a camp.
You have people that have been professionally trained to use discretion, like we hope policemen will be. That's not the same problem as you're dealing with all these other ancillary agencies.
Section 5.
My section 5.
You're together. Page 27.
Section 5 is driving a loop, Section 6 is driving receiving by a witness in the taproom. The first language in Section 5 is similar to the same language used in the bribery article. A person commits the crime of bribing a witness if he offers, confers, or agrees to confer any pecuniary benefit upon a witness in any official proceeding or a person he believes may be called as a witness with the intent that 1. His testimony as a witness will thereby be influenced, or 2. He will avoid legal process summoning him to testify, or 3. He will absent himself from any official proceeding to which he has been legally summoned. And Section 6 is the same, except that it covers the witness receiving a bribe, soliciting a pecuniary benefit with this same intent.
We approve Sections 5 and 6.
I mentioned that pecuniary benefit is defined in Section 1, Subsection 4. Official proceedings defined in Section 1, Subsection 2. Testimony is defined in Subsection 7 of Section 1.
Is there any further discussion? Motion is to approve 5 and 6. Call the roll.
Judge Burns.
Aye.
Senator Burns.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Chandler.
Aye.
Clark.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Knight.
Aye.
Spalding.
Aye.
Aye. Harry. Section 7.
I move we approve, Mr. Chairman. Subsection 7 is Mr. Chandler's statement. Section.
Mr. Chandler, can you address yourself to Section 7?
I'll make things for you. You've heard it several times. Senator Burns, wait, can I speak?
No. You got to fly by your own wings. Briefly tell us your objections.
I've made it so many times, you can't be brief anymore.
It gets better each time.
I don't know whether the commission's heard it, or maybe just your subcommittee's heard it. Well, I don't think it's broad. Because, as it's been explained to me in the subcommittee and by the reporters, it does not, that the provision is limited. If I tell Judge Burns to get out of town, that he's going to be called as a witness tomorrow on something he doesn't want to testify on, I'm guilty of tampering with a witness, but if his lawyer, Senator Burns, tells him to get out of town, it's okay. Now, that basically is my objection.
To which he hasn't been legally summoned.
Yes, we're talking about a witness who hasn't yet been served.
A person he believes may be called as a witness in any official proceeding. And through his connections with the courts and the legislature and all these other things, he knows that this is going to come up tomorrow. Heard at the police station. Tomorrow, so he gets him out of town.
The converse of that, Bob, I can put it in a for instance. I had a preliminary hearing last week, and I was charged with assault with intent or AWDW, and it was not bound over at the grand by the municipal judge. The guy wanted to leave town and had a job down in Eugene or someplace. And so I told him to leave town. He said, can I? And I said, yeah. You may be indicted, you may not be indicted, but my advice to you is to get the hell out of town. If we had what you suggest as a criminal sanction, I'd be committing a crime by telling this guy to go down to Eugene and take this job.
I don't think so, because in that case, at least that's not my intention. My intention is not the iffy situation that a grand jury may be called into session a week from now and may want the guy to testify on that matter, but...
Is this the defendant or a witness?
Either one. Well, this was a defendant in his case.
Well, then, didn't reasonably expect that he'd be called for the grand jury.
No.
All right.
We'll assume that it was a witness. In the case of a witness, where you're not... Well, you have no reason except some possible idea that a grand jury may be called later. I don't see if that's a crime. It's when I think it's criminal conduct for a lawyer to get word that somebody is going to be called on something, and to protect his client, he suggests to a witness that the witness might, if he's got a business trip to take to Honolulu or Chicago, that he take it this week or next week or the week after, or all three.
In that case,
there's
we
money
had him.
Involved, it comes under the previous section.
There's no money involved. Of course, there he'd been subpoenaed.
Yeah, both of them. But under sub 2, absent himself from any official proceeding to which he has been legally summoned.
Of course, there, if he went to a lawyer and the lawyer advised him to go to Baker, why the lawyer would be committed?
Yeah. This guy was summoned to appear in a criminal proceeding in bail on the same day when in Baker.
Got him in a kind of a jackpot with Judge Dora, didn't he?
Yes,
he went
it
to
sure
Baker.
Did.
He's out of the Supreme Court twice.
Mm-hmm.
He's been twice? First
they
time?
Just, they just affirmed it the second time around. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's a...
In that particular case, he made no effort to tell Judge Dora that he'd been subpoenaed to Baker and that he was going to Baker that day either, or did he?
get Judge Dorr to call up Judge Wolf and say, look, we got the same guy coming to both court.
I don't remember.
As I remember this.
Well, he had that go around in Portland between Judge East and Judge Reddy. Remember?
Yeah, I remember that quite well.
Bob, that isn't true. Doro knew about this.
Yeah, he knew about it, but he didn't make it properly. Something or other.
He said, by God, you're going to be here. And he was subpoenaed. He had been subpoenaed first to appear in Baker, so he honored the subpoena, which was first served upon him. And Eason advised him to do it.
They found him guilty of contempt, and they were listening because he made no finding of willfulness, and then they sent it back, and he made a finding of willfulness.
Yeah.
They turned him down again.
And the second time, they sustained the conviction.
Of contempt?
Because it was willful. He deliberately
it
went to Baker.
Deliberate. I don't have any doubt about it, but I see how a guy was in this appeal from two different courts.
For the courts who paid for the administration of justice, though, a case like that.
There was just a little honoriness involved in that case. It never got into the record.
Oh, sure.
I know there was.
I'm in part of
a judge.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think about this? Has there been a motion? We've heard the Chandler version.
Chandler amendment.
Yeah.
Which I'll present at the public hearings if it fails today.
No amendment.
I don't know how to write an amendment on it.
Well, he wants to stick the guy that tells a person who you know is going to be called as a witness but has not yet been summoned with criminal sanctions, you're telling you better get the hell out of here before you get served.
Well, maybe what I'm trying to do is to broaden it to include in the commentary a statement that to the effect that a person is used in line 2 of section 7 includes attorney.
Sure, the attorney would be covered under this as well.
Well, this includes attorneys.
What you'd want to do, Bob, is take sub 2 and say absent himself from any official proceeding to which he has been or may be legally summoned.
Probably will be or something. Anybody might be.
Sure. That's what's
wrong.
I'll accept the amendment to my amendment.
I think you'd get the same result if you put a period after official proceeding.
Isn't that a little bit...
For instance, the other day, a friend of mine asked me, just because not as a lawyer, but just asked me, said that some acquaintances of hers had a divorce case coming up, and the wife told her she was going to have her attorney subpoena here, and done distasteful thing that she didn't know much about and didn't want to be mixed up with. What am I going to do? And besides that, we're planning a trip to Europe. I said, you better take your trip to Europe. And that'll solve it for you, maybe, unless they postpone it until you get back.
Well, you've been guilty under Bob's
Yeah, I would.
And I don't think you should.
Is it improper for a lawyer to tell his client to...
I wouldn't have.
What he doesn't want to testify in the case.
Well, I don't.
Get out of town.
Under my version, Bruce wouldn't have been guilty of anything because
he
was not representing either party.
Oh, you were limited to attorneys.
Yeah.
acting in the parts and scope of their employment.
Yeah, something like that.
Oh. Mr. Chairman moves that we put an affirmative defense in there that this not apply to Bruce Fogg.
Bruce, maybe this doesn't go quite as far as you want, but I think it's pretty important to the gym.
I was sure that all the attorney members of the commission would think it was a gem.
All are old.
Mr. Chairman, before you do, I have a question about the wording here.
All right.
The wording applies to someone who induces a witness or a potential witness. And that sufficiently covers sub 1, but it doesn't cover sub 2 because sub 2 won't come into play until the witness has actually been subpoenaed. And, and how would you have a person commit the crime of tampering by inducing a witness he believes may be called in an official proceeding to absent himself from an official proceeding to which he's been legally summoned? That,
well, he can be summoned and just not be called.
I see what you mean.
I see. In other words, it's a crime under sub 1 if Chandler's been subpoenaed, or even if he hasn't been. If I tell him now, tell a lie or withhold your testimony or something like that.
If they caught you.
Yeah. When you're on the stand.
If and when they caught
you. When you're on the stand, tell a lie or don't tell the whole truth or whatever it may be. But in the second part, if I merely believe that he may be called as a witness, but he isn't yet subpoenaed,
then even time to get out of town.
Well, I think this statute is...
You're inviting him to avoid service.
The section put together.
Well, I'm talking about the wording of what you...
The first part of the statute deals with the question...
It's legal to invite him to avoid service.
The first part of it deals with the question of inducing someone to, or attempting to induce someone to offer false testimony. I don't think any person, but it seems to me it's really a separate concept from the question of getting somebody to absolutely tell someone.
I think Judge Burns' point, if I understand it correctly, is that the words he believes may be called as a witness haven't any application to someone who has already been legally subpoenaed.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of construction matter.
Yeah, but I think the or really frames that in the disjunctive, so that you're in effect saying if he induces or attempts to induce a witness to absent himself from the official proceeding, you don't necessarily have any
suppose that I believe Chandler to be a witness, and I say, why don't you get out of town, and then 10 minutes later, he's subpoenaed. Is that a crime?
No, because he hadn't been summoned at the time you told him that.
Sure.
Why don't you get out of town? Why don't you get out of town if you can do it before you're served?
Yeah. But what the section tries to do is say, first thing that's prohibited, even if the person hasn't been legally summoned, if you think he may be called as a witness, you're not allowed to try to induce him to withhold testimony or offer false testimony, regardless of whether or not he's been subpoenaed or not.
That's true, Your Honor, but even so, the first sentence of that applies to two subsections.
Sure.
It applies to one, and it applies to two.
Sure.
But the language is such that it doesn't make sense with respect to sub two.
I think it does.
Mr. Chairman, I'd suggest this. I put this in the form of a motion. If you strike the word he believes may be called as a witness in any official proceeding, strike all those words, leave the word two in, and then in subsection one, after the word testimony, before the word semicolon, put it in any official proceeding. Seems to me that thing reads a lot better that way.
I think then you'd have the defense that simply I haven't been not a witness.
Yeah, a lot of people are subpoenaed as witnesses who ultimately don't take the stand.
Why wouldn't this, supposing we leave it just as it is, but before absent himself, say, or he knowingly induces or attempts to induce a witness to absent himself, so on?
Well, we change the first word person to lawyer and put a period after proceeding in the last.
Jim, that wouldn't be bad draftsmanship at all. In fact, it'd be good draftsmanship, except you'd be repeating some of the same language in the explanatory, reasonable first clause.
Now, wait a minute. I got a question. What are the words he believes may be called as a witness in any official proceeding modify?
Well, a person is not a witness until they're on the stand.
Well, all right. Now, if you stroke the word that I suggest, you make it a crime for anyone to attempt to induce a witness or a person to offer false testimony or unlawfully withhold any testimony. I don't think you need to word it in any official proceeding there.
Regardless of whether he believes that he may be called as a witness.
Yeah. And then secondly, for the absence himself from an official proceeding to which he has been legally summoned. And I thought we pretty much made the policy decision that's the only time that should be a crime.
Lee, if you are ever subpoenaed as a witness, you tell him you're 29. With your amendment, I'm guilty of a crime right now.
Well,
any person. You go down the street.
We're in such a mix-up on section 7, I think you ought to send back to
insert the words in any official proceedings.
You never dreamed that you'd get as much discussion out of this.
All right, well, go back to my original offer false testimony or unlawfully withhold any testimony in any official proceeding. It seems to me that's where that should be, and not up in the main text. It'll be in the subsection.
I think you're right.
Now give me your amendment.
Because otherwise, I think you're going to get into an interpreting problem of whether this language he believes may be called as a witness in any official proceeding modifies subsection 2. Well, I think it does.
I think it should too, but I think, isn't your amendment to put official proceeding in both 1 and 2?
Yeah, you've got it.
Yeah, we've got it in 2 already. You just take it out of the lead paragraph and put it in.
I would strike the words, he believes may be called as a witness in any official proceeding in the main text, and then insert the words in any official proceeding after the word testimony in subsection 1.
And so subsection 1 wouldn't... Oh, you want it inserted in 1.
Right. So let me read it the way I would read it. A person commits the crime of tampering with a witness if he knowingly induces or attempts to induce a witness or a person, one, to two, and then one, offer a false...
What did you go after person?
I left the word two in there.
Two. Oh, I see.
Two. Then one, offer false testimony or unlawfully withhold any testimony in any official proceeding.
Why do you need a witness? I just to make a person. A witness or a person. Just make a person.
You do that.
Redundant.
Semicolon, or two, absent himself in any official proceeding to which he has been legally summoned.
You don't want to take witness out of it.
Why?
What you need is start.
Then we have to say tampering with a person. He induces, either induces a witness or a person who may be called as a witness. You may have a person who's already a witness in a proceeding that's in progress.
Well, that's all right, but he's a person, isn't he?
Was that induce or seduce in here?
You're not going to have Rogers.
The thing is, I think you've got the problem, the way the thing reads now, is you're going to wrestle with the problem, the court's going to wrestle with the problem with the lawyer. And said to his client, if you don't want to testify in this messy proceeding, you can leave town because nobody's subpoenaed you.
Well, Lee, why couldn't you just take out in any official proceeding out of the first paragraph? And so it would read, attempts to induce a witness or a person he believes may be called as a witness to one.
The words he believes may be called as a witness modifies not only subsection 1, but modifies subsection 2. In other words, it applies to the case where Bruce advises his client.
No. Not unless he's been legally summoned, though.
No, it's...
Well,
to me, the
things that are in conflict.
Well, no, I don't think they're in conflict. I think it's
surplusing.
Well, here's the only way I think we want to salvage this is to leave everything as it is, except in sub 2, have it read, if he knowingly induces or attempts to induce a witness or a person to absent himself from any official proceeding to which he has been legally summoned, and then it doesn't modify his beliefs.
Well, if you do that...
Put the paragraph 1 up after it.
You're right. I think you've got a certain amount of...
Then 2, he knowingly induces or attempts to induce a person to absent himself from any official proceeding.
Did you follow that, Roger?
Yes.
How is that? Does that make sense to you now?
Well, it avoids the problem of any potential confusion between he believes may be called in subsection 2.
And will the meaning remain the same?
meeting when we made the same.
How do you guys like that?
In the eyes of the beholder.
Okay.
Was that a motion?
Yeah.
Motion's been made. Would you state it for us? I'm not sure I understand it.
Yeah, can we hear how it's going to read?
Yes.
After the word
if.
After the word if, insert a semicolon and then a sub one. A colon. And then a sub one to embody the Uturi doctrine. Yeah. And then sub two.
It would read, a person commits a crime of tampering with a witness if, semicolon, sub 1, he knowingly induces or attempts to induce a witness, or a person he believes may be called as a witness in any official proceeding to offer false testimony or unlawfully withhold any testimony, or, sub 2, he knowingly induces or attempts to induce a witness to absent himself from any official proceeding to which he has been legally summoned.
Right. Yeah, I like my way better, Rob.
This,
no, I object to that.
Do you think mine is way better?
It's as bad as it was before, it's better than this.
We
think I ought to have the amendments printed, Mr. Chairman. I can't understand.
you really want it to be?
It doesn't change the meaning.
Let's put it up on Thursday.
Right. You have to take some things on faith, Bob.
It stays with all.
No,
Bob, it stays with all.
Oh, Bob.
Well, as I understand it, you're taking away a person who believes he may be called a witness from the second, from sub two.
Well, of course, because it doesn't work with sub two.
Because,
well, then I was going to put a period after proceedings in sub two.
Oh, yes. Well, I see what you're getting back to the old Chandler proposal.
Yeah.
All those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Carried.
No.
You've heard the motion. Ready for the question? Call or roll.
Judge
Burns. Oh, that sneaky aye. Chandler.
Senator Burns.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Chandler.
No.
Clark.
Aye.
Frost.
Aye.
Durnstead. Johnson.
Yes. Aye.
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 Section 8. Section 8 is known as hands off the witness.
Tampering with physical evidence. Physical evidence is defined as section 1, subsection 5, as any article, object, record, document, or other evidence of physical substance. A person commits the crime of tampering with physical evidence if with intent that it be used, introduced, or suppressed in a pending or prospective official proceeding, he destroys, mutilates, alters, conceals, or removes physical evidence impairing its verity or availability, or sub 2, knowingly makes, produces, or offers any false physical evidence, or 3, prevents the production of physical evidence by an act of force, intimidation, or deception against any person.
You're about to get called, Charlie. You better go down south to California for 3 years to your black eye heels. Better fix that up.
Is black eye physical evidence?
Sure it is. In our definition.
How about growing a beard or shaving off a beard, which is a very typical thing in criminal cases these days?
We're dressing up your clients to look better.
How about in the antitrust matter where the company anticipates there may be an investigation I had a case one time I had to change to go through the company's file. There was no investigation or anything else pending. They destroyed the part of the files.
Yeah. Well, I have to be like that. When it was, because you got to get to work.
There's a lot more tricks in this business than I knew about.
Well, I think there's been an awful lot of documents destroyed before.
This, of course, refers to the material portions of evidence.
Yes, it's physical evidence is defined.
You mean,
say
as distinguished from immaterial.
Right,
yeah, so supposing that here's an evidence, you can tear a corner off. Doesn't.
Books, records?
Yeah. or a...
Well, but impairing his verity or availability, that's all right.
Yeah, but under the, particularly under the federal discovery procedures that we have, I think that many, many times when some outfit figures are going to get sued, the lawyer looks through their files and gets the hell this out of here.
Mm-hmm.
When there isn't yet a lawsuit, but there might possibly be. And,
there's no legal requirement that they keep the records.
No, and
they're right here. There's a prospective official proceeding, though.
Prospective official proceeding, here.
What would happen to the lawyer who advised him to get rid of it?
One being caught crying. No, an accomplice.
Yeah, he
okay. Sorry. Move to approve.
Yeah, there's a lot in this thing, though.
The subcommittee thought there was. We went over this in some detail.
And we...
After we got through the previous session.
What was your rationale? Frankly, we were so tired after listening, after arguing with Bob about Section 7 that we just passed the rest of them hard blank.
Well, this section follows the model penal code, except that you believing that an official proceeding or investigation is pending or about to be instituted.
How about this one? Knowingly produces any false physical evidence. The standard tactic for a defense lawyer and any trustee to get a lot of documents kind of embarrassed about is to give them the whole damn file. stacks of the stuff.
That isn't false physical evidence. That's not false evidence.
Immaterial.
To give him, it's immaterial. Mm-hmm. Irrelevant, perhaps, but it isn't false.
How about the standard ploy of bringing the twin brother down to the preliminary hearing? There have been a number of cases like that.
Oh, yeah. Weird case.
That's false evidence.
Is it? I wonder about
that. Well, under three events, no?
Well, physical evidence means any article, object, record, document, or other evidence of physical substance.
A human being is pretty substantive.
What's a prospective official proceeding?
Yeah.
How far in the future can you do? You have to look to see whether
you take your depositions to perpetuate.
Well, income tax. If there's more than 25% deficiency, the statute of limitations doesn't apply. Or you think that and if there's any fraud, that doesn't apply. After 5 years, you destroy your records. Now, have you violated this when there's an official, prospective official proceeding? There could be.
Well, you take the point of antitrust, which is, I think this is where you probably have more than any other area, but you get wind. The grand jury investigation, and these grand jury investigations go on for a couple of years, you don't know whether your client's going to get called or not.
I can see that this is all right if it's pending. With respect to pending matters.
Sure, the investigation of an accident, the reason they investigated is because of the chance of a lawsuit.
Well, that's probably area of law is I think when you're calling a doctor to testify, you go through his file with him, he's never in the court. You don't want things like your request for historical data that patient will sell it for $20,000. Things of this nature. And you do call the file. You suggest to them that these things are not relevant, and the file we looked at, the defense lawyer is smart, introduced, possible, and then you're in trouble. Now, is that covered by this one?
No, I would say it is. I think everything you do, I think we all be guilty every day.
Move lawyers. Section 789
to 789. We apply all the newspaper publishers.
Well, would it relieve some of the objections if we struck the words or prospective?
No, I think, Mr. Chairman, what we're trying to do in this thing, where's the chairman?
He
went. What we're trying to do is to preserve the integrity of official proceedings.
Right.
And make sure that everything that's necessary to determine the facts or the truth of the matter is available to the court or the body that's supposed to be deciding. And all this gimmicking around about the doctor's files and the lawyer's files and somebody calls him to get the stuff out is bum business, bum public business, in my opinion. And everything that weighs on the matter or has anything to do with it.
A lot of that stuff, Bob, is not, some of it is just prejudicial. And you say to your client, and the client has no obligation to keep this kind of stuff.
Right. If he doesn't keep it and he hasn't kept it, okay. But I think it's bad.
Well, you're saying to the guy that's a lousy record keeper, you're applying a different standard to the lousy record keeper.
I write to the insurance company and give them all the reasons why I think that they might get stuck, and then give them all the reasons why we might win. And usually I don't want that letter to them.
That's what I'd like to see.
That'd be very helpful. Hello, discovery before we start our work.
I would, Mr. Chairman.
You're encouraging oral. One thing you're doing is encouraging oral communication.
A lot of which has gone on in the last couple of years that didn't used to.
I would personally be happier with the model human program. That official proceeding is pending or about to be instituted.
Yes,
because I think if it's about to be instituted, such as your number of your take your situation under the this would be a federal example, your situation where you reasonably expect that the Justice Department is going to file under the Anti-Merger Act, and you scurry around and get rid of everything. So in other words, there are certain areas in which you got a pretty darn good idea, and I think the about to be instituted language would cover those and be more of a protection.
Is a visit by an Internal Revenue agent an official proceeding? Is that an indication that it's about to be instituted?
It's a conference. Where they call you in for a conference,
yes,
is that an official proceeding?
Yes, it is. It's provided for.
Well, if they call you in, I would think so. But
the auditing agent who tours the country every year or so and worrying.
Well, if you get your place on the basis of statute, it says here it has to be where sworn statements are received.
No, that wouldn't be. Field audit.
Proceeding before any judicial administrative body or office wherein sworn statements are received.
But I'm the field auditor
It seems to me there are a number of situations where you probably can be charged with the knowledge that a proceeding is about to be instituted, but when you say prospective, take your accident situation for example, anytime your insured gets in an accident, or an insurance company, in one sense of the word, has got to view that potential lawsuit as prospective.
I see no objection if this is an impending action or about the language that you suggested. Then, if he destroys all or is concealed physical evidence, because we go further, it's impairing its verity or availability. And the second two is all right. The third, I think we should make clear that the production prevents the production of the physical evidence, that it should be something that's really material to that pending proceeding.
Why not just accept the whole model field?
He had some guys back in Justice who were pretty wild there, and they were just turned around at, just as likely, would turn around and sue somebody without any grounds at all in this statute that they destroyed records, you know.
Well, yeah, district attorney in two counties would do the same.
No, only one.
Oh.
May I ask the subcommittee, why didn't you, two questions. One, I wonder why in Oregon over all these years we haven't had a statute similar to this. And two, why did the subcommittee not adopt the language of the Model Penal Code?
Where's our minutes?
which I think is more restrictive.
I checked the minutes, and we didn't discuss that particular thing. It's just a question of which model we followed. That language in this section is from the New York draft. Michigan and the model penal code uses pending or about to be instituted, and New York used prospective official proceeding. But,
I would prefer, I had some questions about it at the time because I thought it was rather broad, Mr. Chairman, but it seems to me that enforceability and practicality is a very important element, and I think I'd move to substitute the model penal code language in its entirety, knock this down into two subsections, and
where is the model penal code?
It's on page 42.
On page 42, or the opinion.
I'm not completely satisfied with that.
You can't do that because the model penal code in the text grades offenses. Where are we in the grade and dirty fashion?
I prefer, Mr. Chairman, the language of R1, 2, and 3 to the two subsections in the Allen penal code. I think it's clearer.
Just change the
prospective
official proceeding to. Official proceeding or investigation that's pending or about to be instituted.
Do you think, Jim, that sub 3 is clear enough that that physical evidence relates to something which is really material to that
pending?
Well, it might not be technically material, but if
well, but this
it'll
is
be
like
good intent that the UNP thinks it's
remember,
material.
We got into this in the perjury situation, too, mm-hmm. and we. Covered this in this area of lack of materiality and so on, and decided that what we're aiming at is not to give a guy a way out if he engages in the forbidden conduct just because later on some judge might say it was not material. And furthermore, because of your discovery statutes, where they say. Anything that contains relevant evidence or anything which is reasonably calculated to lead to the discovery of relevant evidence.
What if it wasn't admissible anyway? Do you think that'd make any difference?
If the guy got rid of it,
like Bruce's letter. Bruce's letter to the insurance company. It's with the intent that it be introduced or suppressed. Someone indicates in a discovery proceeding or something that they're going to demand that letter that you wrote to the insurance company.
Well, I suppose just to make
to your client.
Just to make
would
an,
that have anything with
just to make an observable yeah. example? Suppose in your case file you had a some strange reason, say a rubber ball or a pencil, and you threw it out. Well, it wouldn't come into the evidence in the case anyway. I don't see how that'd be covered.
What if you believe it would?
Well,
what language are we looking at now? Model penal code?
Let's look at Michigan.
Well, page 43 is Michigan, and it seems to me that's kind of pretty close to meeting most of your objections. It's a little different structure.
I had a case once where an officer in a report expressed his opinion that the defendant did not commit the crime. And I thought that the officer was wrong. And the police reports aren't admissible evidence anyway, and the defense attorney is not supposed to get a hold of them.
Wait a minute now.
Oh, this was years
under
ago.
Under State versus Sutton.
This is years ago.
They are.
So we took it out of the file. He kept committing a crime.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. If everyone observed this, it would certainly change the technique and the practice of the law in the trial of cases.
Was that
all
bad?
Of a sudden change it into
no,
the
yes, it
the
is
truth,
bad.
And that might be...
Oh.
Well,
it also has
don't tell me that the district attorney, Frank, doesn't put the letters aside and so on and so forth.
Yeah. Ever suggested officer he doesn't bring his written report to the court with him?
Forget his notebook.
Ever suggested officer he doesn't bring his written report to the court with him? His inside thought.
read it all.
Well, I'm willing to. Have you all looked at Michigan language? Do you prefer that?
What is the definition of an official proceeding?
We define
that to
find
one.
You got my
proxy,
so I'm damn confused.
See, I got to leave to go to. No, just for about 30 minutes.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move that we amend Section 8. By striking or prospective, line 4, inserting after proceeding, or a proceeding or investigation which is about to be instituted, comma.
Would not then have to define investigation?
Tell you what I wrote.
What is the word with intent that it be used?
You intend to do it or is
it written? If he makes it. Oh, if he makes it up, that intended to be used.
A person commits a crime of tampering with physical evidence if with intent that it be used, introduced, or suppressed in an official proceeding which is then pending or to the knowledge of such person is about to be instituted.
All right. That's a lot better.
Suppressed.
All right, I withdraw my motion in favor of Mr. Spalding.
Yeah, that's
about
the same thought.
Yeah, same idea.
Well, if he mutilates it or alters it so that it would be suppressed but it would otherwise be admissible, that would be part of it.
So that it wouldn't be admissible, but what about if he just plain old like in Section 1 destroys it so that it is not even available to be suppressed? Now, is suppressed the proper term to mean that, at least I take it that's what we mean, is
prevent its introduction.
Destroying something so that it wouldn't be available at the time of trial to be used as evidence, and this word suppress cover that. If it does, fine.
I think it does.
Sure it does. That's what it is in here.
No. Let me just raise a question. One of the concerns me is I can see more reason for this in the area of criminal, because it's a pending criminal proceeding.
The state destroyed some evidence?
And vice versa.
Don, you haven't said anything about this. Yeah. How do you feel about it?
No.
Can I finish what I'm...
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I thought you were through.
And the ordinary civil proceeding between two private parties.
Shouldn't be any.
Do you really think
what you're after is to protect the integrity of the proceeding, to arrive at the plain, unvarnished, pure truth.
Well, the plain, unvarnished truth, I mean, you got Company A and Company B. Company A keeps every piece of records and every piece of paper that goes through it, and Company B doesn't. B sues A. A contemplates a suit from B. Says, let's go on a wholesale record destruction program.
Your patients don't get me very excited.
I think the Spalding Amendment makes sense.
May I make I would make a further suggestion to Mr. Spalding that he include this in his amendment as well. I think that we could improve the language by changing the third line so that it reads, with the intent that it be used, introduced, rejected, or unavailable. I think that...
Well, it doesn't suppress. Doesn't take
care of both the rejected and unavailable. The unavailable part.
I'm not so sure that suppressed is the correct terminology. If you destroy it, if you burn a piece of paper, it's a little hard to see that that makes it suppressible.
Well, you're thinking of the word suppressed and suppression of evidence.
I don't know. Whereas if you say used, introduced, rejected, or unavailable,
well, that's all right.
It seems to me that you're making the difference.
So what are the words now after the word?
So the phrase used, introduced, rejected, or unavailable, and so forth, and strike out the words or suppressed.
Is there any issue here at all that deals with self-incrimination? Or is that just some wild thing that I conjured up?
No, it's probably a pretty good question. I think the constitutional protection would go above and beyond this statute, however.
Well,
you're thinking about what she may have a right to make unavailable because of these constitutional protections.
What if you get the case of you foresee a lawsuit and you say, "Dear, I think we better take a look at our books of account, make sure they're up to date and correct. The number of errors are corrected in your books of account."
First, you just buy the bookkeeper.
You might have destroyed the originals and keep the corrected ones.
A lot of these are changes in entries.
That wouldn't be impairing their verity, though.
No, it'd be improving it.
It says alters and so forth.
If you're destroying the originals, what jury's going to believe that's all you did to it?
The point is, though, and you never mentioned it, and these books are later subpoenaed and they're produced, and no one ever asked the question of whether they were ever changed at any time within the last month, and then later somebody discovers that they were changed during the case.
If you're doing it to bolster the lawsuit and by falsification, then you'd be under this section, and if you do it just because you want to correct them, then you wouldn't be under this section. To me, that's the answer.
Jim, would you take over for a few minutes?
I'll be back.
Third tier here.
Yeah, there is that thing about it, Jim, you're the chairman. It doesn't say wrongfully used, or wrongfully introduced, or wrongfully rejected. That's what you're talking about, isn't it? That if a guy puts this physical evidence into better shape so that it's more understandable or more accurate, with the best of intent, he's guilty of violating.
I don't think so. It's not impairing its verity.
Because that doesn't impair its verity.
That's the purpose of it.
It's a relevant issue in the case. This outfit keeps sloppy books.
If he alters it so as to impair its verity.
No, but suppose it's a very relevant issue in the case that this outfit keeps its book that keeps sloppy books, and they try
and that does impair its verity, and they're guilty.
Well, suppose it's my doctor that I've defended a couple of different ones that didn't have
like Mayer versus Dowsett. In that case,
I wasn't on that original thing, but I had one over in Eastern Oregon where a guy went in and where John Day and fixed himself a practically new set of hospital jackets. So that it looked like the thing that he did to the patient existed before he did it.
How about the skipper of the ship that has a collision?
Is that guy in jail?
And he hasn't kept his log for the last week. So he says, I know there's going to be a lawsuit over this, and he brings his log up to date. Well, in that case, you're impairing his verity.
I would say
Thank you.
a question of knowledge.
No.
Sure, he wouldn't have the intent if he didn't know what was going to happen.
I just think that not a lot of people do when they see something like this come and bring the records up.
I call for the question of all these amendments provided to be accepted.
Yeah, I have.
Okay, will you restate your amendment?
Well, so that we'll read, a person commits the crime of tampering with physical evidence if, with intent that it be used, introduced, rejected, or unavailable. So I say made unavailable. Or unavailable. In an official proceeding which is then pending or to the knowledge of such person is about to be instituted, he, colon.
Okay, you've heard the amendment. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
Well, I'm just going to make one comment on it. I'm going to vote the section. I do think there is a concern in this area. It isn't just prosecutors. It can be the attorney on one side or another. But I can just see cases being brought in. People, I know he suppressed records.
Will we approve section 8?
Okay.
Well, the charge can be worse than that.
Mr. Chandler moves that we approve section 8 as amended. Those in favor or answer aye. Their names are called. Those opposed, no.
Judge Burns?
Aye.
Cinder Burns?
Aye.
Carson?
Aye.
Chandler?
Aye.
Clark?
Aye.
Ross? Johnson?
Aye.
Knight?
Aye.
Spaulding?
Aye.
Young?
Aye. All right, passed. Section 9. Representative Frost wants to be recorded as 29.
Move it to Section 9.
Any discussion?
Does this replace a number of present Oregon sections?
Yeah, they were set out in 45 and 46.
Forgery, removing, destroying, or mutilating of state police records.
Why do you need the words without lawful authority?
Well, because there are people who have the state archivist, for example, has the authority to destroy
things.
I don't know.
But what if he does it on purpose to thwart the law?
And various other agencies have the right to remove things from their files and deliver them to Mr. Dunaway, the state archivist, who then has the power to destroy the ones that he doesn't think are. But they have the legal authority to do this, you see.
What if a person with lawful authority to make, keep these records, craps them up intentionally?
Well, he doesn't have the lawful authority to crap them up.
Authority.
He might have authority to destroy them, though. He does it with the intent to thwart justice.
Then
he
doesn't have that lawful authority. He doesn't have a lawful authority to destroy them for the purpose of thwarting justice.
He has the lawful authority to destroy him.
Under certain
statutory conditions.
Prescribed conditions.
Well, it was. it's not debatable. It doesn't make any difference whether you say without lawful authority or whether you say if he unlawfully.
Yes, sir.
And one, yeah. Six of one or half a dozen of the other. Mr. Attorney General Johnson wants to destroy some records in his office. He's got the authority to do it. Providing there isn't
a Mr. Aliotto doesn't come back to get him.
All right, well, there's a motion that we approve Section 9 as a draft, and there isn't further discussion. Then all in favor of the motion will answer aye. As your name is called, most opposed, no.
Judge Burns?
Aye.
Approved section 10.
We'll approve section
10. Hang on. 7. Suppose your client came to you.
You don't get up.
We're getting back.
It's all right. I got one. Keep the lips quiet, everybody. Go ahead.
Suppose your client came to you.
3 years has passed. Tells you that filed his tax return 3 years ago, did certain things that might possibly not have fraud. Any questions? Records?
Guess it's tampering with the witness, section 7.
Or section 8.
Oh, you're getting back to...
Well, that's all right, then. I don't want any more discussion on section 8. If he was going to discuss 7, it was all right.
All right.
Number 10. A person makes a crime and resists an arrest if he intentionally resists a person known by him to be a police officer for making an arrest. Now, we had a discussion in here in the subcommittee about whether he had to know that the guy was a peace officer. And we decided that we'd insert this and impose criminal liability only if it were known by him that the individual were a police officer. Is that right?
That's right.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. And... go ahead, Roger. This was one section about which we had considerable discussion.
Well, you know, we call it section 2, obstructing, exempted, right. Resisting arrest. So it's covered in section 10. Subsection 2, we set out what we mean by resist. And that's the use or threatened use of violence, physical force, or any other means that creates a substantial risk of physical injury to any person, meaning the officer or bystanders. And the object there is to not, is to exclude from resisting arrest verbal arguments, fleeing.
Exclude flight.
Flight. The subsection 3 takes away the defense for prosecution under resisting arrest that the peace officer lacked legal authority to make the arrest, provided that the officer was acting under color of an official authority. This would be a departure from existing case law in Oregon, which now allows a individual to resist an unlawful arrest by reasonable force.
If by hindsight he can show that it was some technical difficulty with the warrant or something.
Actually, our rationale for this section was about the same as we employed in our justification article in that no sock principle, where it's
there are other
you're not allowed to
the legality of the arrest other than on the street.
Yeah, right.
Well, Roger. I didn't quite understand. When Frank asked you about flight, or somebody asked you about flight, this doesn't comprehend flight.
That's,
is that separately covered?
If an arrest has been made, it would be third degree escape, and that the party would be in constructive custody.
What if the arrest hasn't been made?
Then it would not be a crime.
Or run away.
When is the arrest made?
When
he has him physical custody down, or when he comes up and places him under arrest?
I think the moment he,
and then the guy
verbally or physically makes it known that the party is under arrest, then he's under.
I think you're under arrest.
Or he's under actual arrest.
Or actually.
Constructive.
Push your arm up behind your ear.
I thought we had a statute, maybe it's a city ordinance in Portland, I'm not sure which, that
leading to avoid arrest.
Interfering with a police officer, but one of the ways that you commit it is by running away when he comes up to guard and says, I've got a warrant for your arrest.
Eluding the police officer. That's one of the major traffic crimes, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's only applies to traffic cases.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why you have a special statute for that. I'm not sure that the officer needs all kinds of things to, the guy runs off on him. The officer's going to run around and try to catch him again some other way.
Well, we've got it covered under escape anyway, I think, for most.
If you've got an arrest. If he's actually physically
Make an obvious trick, man.
The officer yells at him, halt, you're under arrest.
You're under arrest.
Yeah. And the guy ought to stop. Even considered good for him to stop.
Yeah, even there, though, he wouldn't be resisting arrest if he continued to run without use of force or something that would bring him under this section. That's going to be escape.
See, there's an element of fair play, and if I've arrested people, if I went out and some guy saw me coming a block away and I screamed at him and he hightailed the other way, I would expect him to do that. I don't think I'd have
a we ought to acknowledge track ability. We ought to acknowledge and appreciate track ability.
I take it also this can be committed by someone other than the person who is about to be arrested.
Yes.
Yeah. All his friends and neighbors.
All right, is there any further discussion? Heard the motion. If there's no further discussion, all in favor of the motion say aye as your names are called.
Judge Burns?
Aye.
Carson?
Aye.
Chancellor?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Clark?
Aye.
Ross?
Excuse.
Johnson?
Aye.
Knight?
Aye.
Spaulding?
Aye.
Young?
Aye. Section 11, Roger.
This section is titled Hindering Prosecution. This is what's commonly thought of as an accessory after the fact. Rather long section. We originally had this in two different sections. The person commits a crime hindering prosecution if with intent to hinder the apprehension, prosecution, conviction, or punishment of a person who has committed a crime punishable as a felony, or with the intent to assist a person who has committed a crime punishable as a felony, or with the intent to assist a person who has committed a crime punishable as a felony in profiting or benefiting from the commission of the crime, he does any one of six things. Sub 1, harbors or conceals such person. 2, warns such person of intended discovery or apprehension. Provides or aids in providing such person with money, transportation, weapon, disguise, or other means of avoiding discovery or apprehension. Prevents or obstructs by means of force, intimidation, or deception anyone from performing an act which might aid in discovery or apprehension of such person. Presses by any act of concealment, alteration, or destruction, physical evidence which might aid in discovery or apprehension of such person, or aid such person in securing or protecting the proceeds of the crime.
Chairman, I have a question in the before you get to subsection 1. There are three intents which might be used. One is the intent to hinder the apprehension and so on. Two is intent to assist the person who's committed the felony. And three, with the intent to assist the person committed the felony in profiting or benefiting. And I don't understand the difference between the second and third intent. How would you, what would be comprehended within intent number 2? In other words, with intent to assist a person who has committed a crime punishable as a felony, what does that cover that isn't covered with the...
2 would be helping the guy get away, 3 would be going and picking up the money. Is that it?
Well,
yes, 3 actually applies primarily to subsection 6.
If you intend to hinder the apprehension, prosecution, conviction, and punishment of such a person, then why do you need the second descriptive intent? Intent to assist the person who is coming. Maybe there's a reason for it. You can either
hinder his catching or help him. Get the proceeds.
Help him do what?
Go get the money that he buried out in the weeds.
That's the third intent.
Yeah.
The intent to assist a person who's committed a felony in profiting or benefiting.
Now,
what assistance
what's the
to
second?
Such a person is comprehended within the middle section. That's what
well,
we
the middle
anything
section.
Anything but profiting or benefiting.
Suppose an act commits murder where there's no profit or benefit to him, you intend to assist him.
Well, assist him how?
Get away.
Across the street?
Get away.
Well, then it sets it out.
That's hindering apprehension.
You assist him, you can harbor or conceal him.
Give him a check. Tom, get it.
Or you warn him of impending discovery.
Isn't that hindering apprehension?
Perhaps technically, but it more explicitly it might be assisting. I have a question different than yours, but it's
okay.
Basically the same, and that is, why do we have the third one?
Well, this, originally we had two sections in our first draft in the subcommittee, and I think that we ended up with all these actually restatements of the intent element as a result of the combination of the two previous sections. We had a first degree offense and a second degree. And it was decided to combine the two sections.
Well, suppose, well, just to make a foolish example, suppose a guy is panhandling along 6th Avenue and he's just finished robbing the bank, let's say, unbeknownst to me, and I come along and give him a dollar.
You didn't have the intent.
Well, I've got the intent to assist him.
Well, then it was said, with intent to assist a person.
And I provided him with money under sub 3.
He knows has committed a crime. He.
You'd add that. Those
yeah,
words.
But you didn't provide him money.
I add those words to get around
yeah.
His
there. In other words, it occurs to me, and I'm sure my hypothetical is outrageous, but where you say intent to assist a person.
Well, wouldn't it answer your objection by John's addition?
What was your addition?
After the word assist, he knows.
He knows has committed a crime, punishable felony. He.
Change who to he knows.
Could somebody give me an example of the second intent, an example of the second intent that wouldn't be covered under the first intent?
The third.
You mean the third wouldn't be covered under the second?
That's what I thought. I thought.
I can't think of any.
I can't see where the third adds anything to the second.
Yeah, I've undermined the
thing. Okay, intention.
Well, I can see the third one.
I can see the third one.
The third one deals with a situation where you try to hide the person
who has committed it.
Yeah, but that would be under the second, too, wouldn't it? It's assisting, period.
Yeah, and the trouble is, when you attempt to assist such person, suppose you.
Suppose you did something.
Suppose you're a doctor.
Suppose you did something that was otherwise lawful, like giving a buck to the panhandler.
Yeah, but if you knew the panhandler had committed a crime punishable,
well, then that's different.
All right.
Well, yeah, suppose you're a doctor, Lee, and then with this intent,
you
harbor injury.
Well, how are you going to assist
warning?
Him to do what? That's
well,
the
that's
question.
Well, that's covered by 1-6.
That's covered by 1-6.
Well, if
suppose
he
the
does
doctor
it,
harbors him,
he harbors or conceals. Okay, that's
you know,
got to
care of
apprehension, prosecution, conviction. Warn the person. That's got apprehension, prosecution, conviction. Provide drains and provide a person money, transportation, or to discovery. That applies to intent number one.
So was that?
Was this
your subcommittee?
Well,
9-4 applies to intent number one.
You got away from me that night.
It wasn't mine.
Five.
I agree with Jim. I think Jim, the middle one, I can't see what you need for. The last one I didn't see because that deals.
Right.
You agree?
Well, I agree. And originally, drafted, we had the first one and the third one, and we didn't have the second one. And that second one was put in And I said we had two sections. We actually had three to start with. We had rendering criminal assistance, and then we defined what we meant by rendering criminal assistance in one section. And then we had, that was section 11 of preliminary draft number one. And then section 12, we had hindering prosecution in the second degree. And that covered a felony. And in the first degree, it covered a crime punishable by life imprisonment. So the subcommittee decided that we shouldn't try to distinguish between these crimes, so they were all combined. And I think, and in combining them, rather than having a section that defined what we meant by criminal assistance, we put it all in here, your subsections 1 through 6. And because we had an intention stated as part of our definition of the term criminal assistance. And so in transferring this from a definitional section to a section defining the crime itself, we included another clause in there on intent, which would appear to be unnecessary, I think. But,
well, Mr. Chairman, I'll move that way. That way, fourth, sixth, seventh line after the word felony, we insert the word he, colon, and strike the balance of the matter down to sub one. Because assuming we can agree on the first set of intentions, the second set of intentions is to assist the officer he knows has committed a crime punishable as a felony. Now, whether we're assisting him to
profit,
to profit or not, or to secure the benefits or anything else, doesn't make any difference. What we were after was that we don't want people to help him. And
how would that read, Ron?
All right, I'll read just the start. Hindering prosecution. A person commits a crime hindering prosecution if the intent to hinder the apprehension, prosecution, conviction, or punishment of a person who has committed a crime punishable as a felony, or with the intent to a person to assist a person who he knows has committed a crime punishable as a felony, comma, he, one, harbors or conceals such a person.
Leave out that third intent.
Well, the third one is redundant, excepting for the portion that profiting or benefiting. We cover that in 6.
The only suggestion or comment I would have to make is, should we say he knows or has good reason to know?
He knows or has good reason to know. Fine.
All right.
To know what?
He committed a crime punishable as a felony.
Knows or had good reason to know that this guy committed
the
crime.
Committed a crime punishable as a felony.
You have heard the Chandler Burns amendment. All in favor of the amendment, say aye. You ever heard of more lethargy budget? Those opposed, no. All right, it has passed. If we can get Section 11 out of the way quickly, we will have a recess.
Move to approve Section 11.
That's bribery.
Now, under the amendment, now you're going to have to prove that he not only rendered the assistance, but at the time he rendered it, he knew that the individual had committed
a
felony,
or had
a crime punishable as a felony.
Yeah, I had good reason to know.
We want to cover the doctor.
We have to prove this
fellow with a gunshot hole through his shoulder.
Prosecution and so forth.
Or that he intended to assist the person who he knew.
Yeah, but under that, intending to hinder, he doesn't have to know, does he, that he committed a
felony? Yeah.
No.
Well, he has to. Well, sure, he has to know in the.
He couldn't very well have an intent to hinder it unless he knew something about it. It's true.
Well, maybe I see what Don's getting at. Maybe we've got a double standard here.
That's discussed on the bottom of page 65. Common law rule requires the accessory after the fact to have guilty knowledge the person may have committed the crime. This rule has been eliminated in modern legislation. It is submitted that the requirements of intent to hinder law enforcement makes unnecessary the further requirement of knowledge. Knowledge that the person aided has committed the crime is simply evidence of the intent to aid the offender to escape.
Seems to me that's sufficient, isn't it? If without requiring the proof that he knew that this guy committed a crime punishable as a felony?
Yeah, what if he didn't know which crime were so punishable and which weren't?
My thing is, how does he know that it's worth $80 or $70 when he steals something?
Yeah.
I mean, he takes his chances on whether he had the intent to commit a crime, but it turns out that he determines whether he's committed a crime.
The guy says, well, I knew he committed a crime, but I thought it was a misdemeanor. Well,
what you're saying is that the...
I'm working under the old law.
I think that's an unreasonable burden to put on the state.
Mr. Chairman, I removed my half of the Chandler Burn motion. I dropped my half of the Chandler Burn motion. I'm persuaded by Mr. Gillette's argument. I remember it in the subcommittee.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm unwilling to approve language that where it says, with intent to assist a person who has committed a felony, that he aids such person in securing and protecting the proceeds of the crime. For example, if a guy steals a car, he comes around, and I buy it from him, and I pay a reasonable price for it, I've aided that guy in securing or protecting the proceeds of the crime.
But the state has to prove that you had the
intent. I had the intent to assist him. I assisted him by buying the car. So that's
your intent was to buy the car, not to assist him.
Would somebody explain to me as an example of a situation that covers the second intent that would not and would come within one of these six that would not fall within the first intent?
Well, I think the motion took care of that, didn't it? I mean, I was going to take that out.
It's going to take
third,
it out.
We took the third
intent out. Well, let me see if we
take the third intent out, but I mean, really, it's the second intent that we don't need.
Well, can we get a consensus on this?
Right. I think it's the middle one that ought to come
out.
Yeah,
it's the middle one that adds nothing. I mean, because intent is...
We have a five-minute recess. We get a consensus on the recess and think about it and get reinvigorated.
All right.
Well, maybe we're pretty close to...
All right, all right.
I withdraw my half of the Burns-Chandler motion, and instead I move to amend Section 11 by removing the words in the middle there, or with the intent to assist a person who has committed a crime punishable as a felony, so that we have the first intent and the third intent, but not the one in the middle.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Yeah.
That's the way it was originally.
Okay.
All right. If there's no objection, then by unanimous consent, we'll withdraw the amendment that previously been passed. Hearing no objections, withdraw.
Jim, I didn't take you too long.
Now, you've heard the new proposed amendment. All in favor of this amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, no. Hearing. Now,
move we approve Section 11.
All right. Mr. Chandler moves we approve Section 11 as amended. All in favor, say aye. As opposed, no.
Judge
Brunner.
Aye.
Sandra Brunner.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Chandler.
Aye.
Clark.
Aye.
Ross. Not here. Johnson.
Aye.
Knight.
Aye.
Spaulding.
Aye.
Yeah.
Aye.
Okay, let's take a 10-minute recess.
Gentlemen, before you all get out, I'd like to introduce a new assistant we have from Willamette Law School, Ron Podnar, who's a second-year law student and is